Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 42 of the Playoff Push Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Dobbins, and today I am joined by a very special guest, former Seahawks and Patriots tight end, Christian Fourier. How are we today?
I'm doing good, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing great, doing great. Actually, just finished my final AP exam today, so I'm graduating Saturday. So that's a big thing right there. So, as I told you, I'm actually a Giants fan, but a lot of my friends are Patriots fans. So actually, they've helped me, conjure up some of the questions on this episode. So there's a little bit of information right there for you. But of course, let's start off with what everyone's thinking about. You got to play with Tom Brady for so many years, and you got to play with him at the start of his career. This was a young Tom Brady from 02 to 05. What point did you realize where he was like, oh, where you were like, okay, this guy's legit?
Well, it's funny. I would say, like, since I'm older than him, he had the opportunity to play with me, even though I joined that team. I will say this, and this is like, I think you can tell this about coaches, about players, about people in business, your professors, the guy that cuts your lawn. I think you can recognize right away if somebody is talented. Really, in the first day. Well, Tom, it was right away. Like the tone of his voice, how he carried himself, the inflection of his voice, how important it was to him, even just in a random walkthrough, how he held other people accountable, how he was self-deprecating, how he listened to other people. Like, you notice it right away. Like, right away. I will say, like, it's, I played with a lot of great quarterbacks. Warren Moon being another one, Hall of Fame quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Hasselbeck, Trent Dilfer, Vinny Testaverde, like just to name a few, right? And you notice it right away. And it's reinforced when they get in the huddle and they start talking about the plays and they're interacting even before the plays even called. We're just bullshitting back and forth. Real easy to kind of understand. And Brady never called a play with a question mark. There was never any red, right, north, wide option. There was none of any of that stuff. So he said it with, like with a lot of conviction. And even if he was wrong, and sometimes he was, you wouldn't know it. So I would say, and not to just listen, enough's been said about Brady, but I would say, how did I know he was really good? Like right away. Now, I didn't know he'd be what he turned out to be, but I knew he was a really good pro quarterback.
And clearly it led off your tenure in New England pretty well. You led the Patriots in touchdown catches in 2002 with 7. Did you feel like that season redefined your reputation as a player?
It was funny. Yeah, absolutely. I spent 7 years in Seattle. I think I had 7 touchdowns. So the first year I rolled into New England, I get 7 plus 1 because I had a 2-point conversion to end the season.
Oh,
Miami actually, so which would have gotten us into the playoffs, and got us. But anyways, that's a whole nother story. But yeah, absolutely. I was, I was in Seattle 7 years. I had 2 different head coaches. Holmgren came in late, but I was hurt all the time. Always hurt. Could never be healthy. Multiple surgeries. All it was a nightmare. So I never really felt 100% or even close to it, but I managed it. And I just never felt like I really did like what I could have done there. So that first year in New England, when I was on year 8, and I was like, man, I don't even know if I got anything left in the tank. But you know what? I would say, Charlie Weiss was a big part of that. He was the offensive coordinator. Jeff Davidson, my tight ends coach, was a big part of that. Bill was a big part of that, and Tom. And really, when I think about it, like Charlie Weiss really gave me an opportunity. He really trusted in me. He put me in positions to thrive. And I a lot of people like have different opinions of Charlie Weiss. Personally, for me, at my time in my life, I wanted brutal honesty, and he gave it to me. And I didn't care about his demeanor or his disposition or how angry he would get and condescending he was at times. I didn't care. It was the perfect marriage for me.
Yeah, sometimes brutal honesty is that best thing where, it might not be what you want to hear, but it's what you need to get the most you can out of the situation right there. Is that kind of what he gave you?
Listen, in the NFL, any college, like it starts in college, when you get recruited and they're just telling you everything you want to hear. Listen, I can't, like, I know things would change. My old coach, Jeff Davidson, he would always say something in our meeting room, and then he would say, "Now we all know that everything is subject to change." Yeah, it's the NFL. Everything is subject to change. You could get hurt, you could drop a ball, you could, like, whatever. But I was like, man, I knew where I stood. And that's what I want for my coach. You got to be honest with us. We're grown adults. We're not little babies. Like, we're not kids. Like, we can handle it. And if you can't handle it, you're in the wrong business. So my thing with the NFL, and this is my thing with coaches, I can't do anything unless I know what you want. Once I know what you want, then, I can try and give you that because that's the business I'm in. Like, you're asking me to do X, Y, and Z. Okay, well, tell me how you want me to do it, because I've had so many coaches and every single person teaches it differently. Like, the best offensive line coaches, the best tight end coaches, they will teach one, call it a outside zone play with a shaded end or linebacker. They will all teach it differently. Like, honest to God, they will teach you how to catch differently. So my thing is, man, like, for me, like, if I was on the left side of the line of scrimmage, I never put my left hand down. Like, most tight ends, that you're on the left side, you put your left hand down. You're on the right side, you put your right hand down. I wasn't doing that. Every single coach tried to break me of it. I was like, listen, I'm fine with my right hand on the ground. It may seem trivial or inconsequential to you, but for me and the coaches, it was a big deal. I just said,
Wow.
I'm just not doing it. It just, I was just as good with it. Was just, I never did it. So, but yeah, I think that is, like, back to the honesty part. Like, you'll see when you get older, you'll have some people that will blow smoke. They'll just, like, tell the safe answer, because it's less about you, it's about them. They're uncomfortable with uncomfortable conversations. So they couch the important part, and then you leave their office and you're like, I mean, I'm just as confused as when I walked in here. So that, to me, is massively important to me.
Gotcha. And of course, those all go back right to the coaches and what they teach you on their individual bases right there. And with those 7 years in the Seattle before joining the Patriots, how different were those locker rooms, and what did New England do to give you those two Super Bowls that Seattle didn't?
Well, it's funny. So in Seattle, man, we were stacked with talent. Okay, but our coach was Dennis Erickson, and I love Coach Erickson. I love him, but he was just real loose, and the rules were, and there was always a sliding scale, and we were always 8-8 or 7-9. This is back when he had 16 games, and we always lost some game that we should have won. We absolutely should have been a player when Coach E was our coach. He gets fired, Holmgren comes in. And Holmgren comes in, and he instantly just changes everything. He rolls in with credibility, accountability, of a huge ego, and a huge resume from his days at San Francisco and his days at Green Bay, and now he's the GM and he's the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. So we made the playoffs and won the division the very first year, and eventually they went to the Super Bowl. So the one thing I think is always, like, I would say, part of the equation for every championship team I've been on, or just call it great team, and maybe we didn't win a championship, because when I was in college, we had an unbelievable team, but we didn't win it. But man, we were really freaking good. We ended up, like, second in the nation in 1994. But anyways, they all have the same thing in common. They have, like, a strong core of players, right? Like, even with strong personalities, they all have just a unified understanding of what's expected, right? Regardless of status or money, like, we all are kind of working for the same goal. And and the message from the coach is pretty clear, so there's no confusion. So with 52 guys, 53 guys in a meeting room, more than that, based on practice squad players, when they all leave the meeting room, they all leave with the same message. They're not no, The guy next to me isn't hearing something different because the coach is saying it pretty clearly. And we're all unified with what we want, so we're not, like, seeing ghosts or making things up. So in Seattle, we had a great group of guys. In the first 4 years, it was just, man, we just couldn't get our shit together. When Holmgren rolls in, similar group of guys, we got our shit together. We were winning those close games. We were battling through injury. We were running through the doldrums, which is like, Thanksgiving when you're just tired of football. And we were successful, right? That was a good group of guys. In New England, right away, you asked me what the first thing I saw about Brady, right away, leadership everywhere. Captains, there was at least 25 guys on that team that could be captains in any team. They could be the captains, the leaders,
Oh, most
with the
definitely.
very, very strong personalities. But they only have four, but any one of them could have been a leader. Like, they were leaders, they just weren't captains.
Gotcha. And of course, yeah, those Seattle teams were loaded. You get, as you said, Moon and Hasselbeck at quarterback. You had Galloway and Jackson at wide out. But yeah, so it was just like a team issue that really didn't lead to success on the field record-wise.
I think that the thing that was missing is, when games came down, there was always something that we didn't do. Like, we couldn't win the close game. That's why we were always 8-8. I think if there was 1 year we only won 7 games, but I bet if you went back and looked at those 7 years that I was there, minus the seventh year when we actually won the division, went to the playoffs, you would see that we probably had some situation where it's like, we lost 4 games. 4 or 5 games, like one possession games, right? It was a terrible situation with a fumble here, an interception there, a non-goal. It just, we couldn't make the play that would help us win. In year seven, I mean, in year what, that was 5, we did make all those plays. It was a totally different experience.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I did do the checks on those Seattle teams before this episode. You had 1 year where you went 6-10, 1-7-9, 3-8-8, 1-9-7.
So think about that. So, like, the 8-8s, it's plus or minus. It's usually like 4 or 5 games. And you see it in the NFL right now. It's like the teams that can win close games, that are good in that play complementary football, teams that are good at situational awareness. They have a true understanding of, like the coach can't be the only person who knows what's going on. Like, the players have to understand the situation. They need to know the clock. They need to know what type of situation they're in, because, hey, holy cow, we're trying to stretch the clock. Now we're trying to save the clock. Now we have to, why is this situation so important? And then you got to know what they're going to do. And you can't freak out and wet your pants when that situation comes up. And there's just so many things that go into it. And I think ultimately, like, you talk about, like, what makes great teams, this difference between great teams and good teams. Obviously, if you assume that everybody's got the same personnel, the quarterback obviously makes a big deal. The head coach is a big deal. And just, your roster and how they handle those situations.
Yeah, because an example, Patrick Mahomes, outside of Kelsey, he's never really had that loaded of a wide receiver core, but he still makes it work.
Yeah, well, it's funny, like, the older you get, so what they do is they get rid of Tyreek Hill. They draft in the first round. Who do they get? I get that kid out of, forgot who the kid they got.
They got Worthy last year.
Worthy, yeah. So they got him. So they're trying to develop. He's a first round pick, so it's not like they're not
Super
adding to the
fast.
roster. Yeah, I mean, so, like, they're drafting him players. They do a good job developing backs. Kelsey is always going to be Kelsey, but they had Tyreek Hill. Like, they had some
They
weapons.
did. They did.
Okay, so that's not, it's funny. Like, let's, it's like even the Patriots, they say, well, he never really had any great players. Well, yeah, he did. Like, Brady had a lot of great players. Like, Dion Branch was a MVP of a Super Bowl. Julian Edelman, Wes
Oh,
Welker,
yeah.
Moss. I'm like, give me a break. Like, the list goes on and on and on. But they had some lean years also. But I would say the general rule for me when it comes to, like, what makes a quarterback great? What makes Patrick Mahomes great? Like, what allows Andy Reid to sit back and be like, we'll be fine, right? Great, great quarterbacks. They can take a good player, make him great, and a great player, and make him a Hall of Famer. That's the way I see it. Like my first year in New England, a big part of it was like Brady was giving me chances. He was throwing me the ball and he wasn't putting it in some shitty area where I would look like a dope but for dropping it, but he made it. It was a tough catch, but he put it right where it needed to be. And I got the opportunity to make plays, and then you make one, then you get another one, then you get another one, and it's this great
Domino effect.
opportunity. Yeah, it's the best.
Man, wow. I can't even imagine what it was like playing on those Patriots teams, because you're a part of history, and you're making these plays, and then you get to look back at it and you're like, wow, I really did all that.
I tell you what, I don't dismiss it at all. When I see like so what is it? Cornell was up here the other day playing for the national championship, forgot against Maryland.
Great game, by the way.
I was watching the game and I was like, so Cornell rushes the field, they're throwing their gloves and their sticks all in the air, guys are hugging, the coach is crying. And I just sat there and I looked at it, I'm like, there's nothing like it. There isn't anything like it. There's just it isn't, it can't be replicated. People say, oh, my kid was the best thing in the world. Like when our kids were born, like, yeah, totally different. Winning a national championship, winning a championship, just call it a championship, really, at any level. Just from the players on the field, the coaches, the parents, there's just nothing like it, man. You can't replicate it. And they're so hard to get. They're so hard to get. So when you get them, you just remember them. You have friends for life. You have this unified like experience that will never separate you. It's always just a really good just time in your life that when you're 60 or 70, you can get the same group of guys and have the same conversation that you had 50 years ago.
Yeah, of course. And with those championships, of course, coached by Coach Belichick. My next question is going to be, what's like the craziest or funniest Belichick moment that you experienced as a Patriot?
It's funny, like I don't have like crazy stuff, I don't really have anything like
Was
that.
he really that baseline where it's just like everything was just standard?
Yeah, it's not like, the one thing that I always remember, and again, it's nothing like, it's nothing like, nutty. It just isn't. It was the one thing people the video that or the time that people kind of like use is, and I don't remember which Super Bowl it was. We played the Eagles, what 34 or 36, I don't really remember, man. We played the Eagles and Bill finds out that the Philadelphia Eagles have already charted their championship parade route. Okay, so he finds this out.
Whoa.
And we have a meeting like the night before the game, and he's sitting there and he's talking about it, and he's kind of like, challenging us. He's like, almost like, listen, they're so sure of that they're going to win. They're already planning the parade route. Then he sits there and he goes, if you're curious what the route is, I'll tell you. He's like, oh, we'll go down Independence Lane and turn right, and we'll end up at the town hall. So he's going through this, and we're all just like, who do they think they are? So like literally hook, line, and sinker. You should grab that video. You can find it easy. The funny thing is that of course they had already planned the parade route. Every single city does it. Like they all do it just in case. Hey, it's not like you can't win the Super Bowl on a Sunday and go, holy shit, let's start planning on Monday. You have to do some preliminary like work. So we're sitting there like I'm about to jump out of my seat and be like, go smash a wall. And here is this guy is just flat out using this knowledge that to his advantage, because at the time we didn't know. We had no clue. Like we're like, these guys think they're gonna win, So I always think about that because it's just such a funny situation. And once you're in Super Bowl parades, you know that the city, like they gotta hire police officers, they gotta barricade, they gotta do that. They can't do it the day before.
Especially in Philly, especially in Philly.
Yeah, agrees. They gotta grease the poles.
Oh my God. That's funny because like, I never even thought that the coach would, bring up the parade. I think, it's all about the game. It's all about the game. But that's actually
He
kind
was
of
trying to get
crazy.
us worked up. He was trying to get us worked up, And I tell you, it worked. It was like one of the better. Most of the time in the pros, their pregame speeches don't exist. They're just, it's matter of fact, and There's, even like the rah-rah stuff that you see on the field, everybody's going crazy. It's usually just like, I don't know, I'm just not really into it. But, every now and then though, the emotions are real, the hatred is real, and you just want to bust somebody in the mouth, regardless of where they're from or, how you're connected to them.
Wow. I mean, of course, playing for the Patriots and, experiencing all this as a player and then heading over to New England Radio. Did that give you like a unique position, and were there any challenges or benefits that came with it?
Well, I tell you what, like I got they asked me to be a co-host on one of these shows, and I was like, listen, man, like I've never watched a hockey game in my life. I don't know the rules at all. It's a big hockey town. I haven't watched or played baseball since I played for Northridge Little League in the San Fernando Valley. And I was a casual basketball fan, but I hated the Celtics. I grew up in LA. I like the Lakers. I hate Danny Ainge.
Oh,
I hate
yeah.
Bird. I hate all those guys. So here I am going, like, hey, you gotta talk about all of them. I was like, holy crap. But lucky for me that it was 80% football. Like 80% football. So yeah, it did, especially like when I was done, it gave me a unique perspective. Because a lot of the guys that the same coaches were there when I played, Bill was there, same ownership group, same trainers, I knew a lot of people in the organization. I knew how they thought, I knew the conference really well. So it was easy to kind of rip the Jets and talk about the Bills and everything like that. So yeah, so that was an easy transition talking about the Patriots. Absolutely, because I think I wasn't that far removed, and plus they were winning.
Yeah,
They were
exactly.
winning.
You were a part of
So,
the dynasty at the beginning, and it was still going on after retirement. Why not keep going with it?
no, it was a lot of fun, man. We had a lot of fun doing it. At one point in time, we became the number one show in the city, which was a big accomplishment because no one had done that in like forever. So yeah, it was definitely unique.
And also, that was at the end of your career. I do have one more thing to go back to. At the tail end of your career, I don't know if you have the date off the top of your head, but November 18th, 2007, you were in Carolina and you caught a touchdown pass from Vinny Testaverde, another incredible quarterback you played with. And from as far as I could figure out, it seems that that's one of the oldest combined ages for a touchdown reception ever. Vinny was 44 and you were 36 for a combined age of just around 80 for that catch. Do you remember that play and the historical value of it?
Thank you, Jack, for bringing that up.
I had to. I was
Listen,
like, how can I say this?
that's the best record. It's the best record in the NFL that nobody talks about. Until I love it. I love the fact that I own that record. I love it. There was a time when Ben Watson was playing for the New England Patriots and Tom Brady, like obviously was there too. And then he had really the first opportunity to break it. And every time the Patriots would play and they would get to the red zone and the goal, I was like, don't throw it to Ben. Or they throw it, I'd say, drop it, drop it. I was openly hoping that Ben would drop the ball. Just so I could keep that record. Yeah, dude, that was really fun. I can't, it's to me, I love that record because it's just really unique in a
Yeah.
way. And one, it's kind of a testament of longevity, which I'm kind of proud of. Like Vinny being as old as he was and me being as old as I was, it's really hard to do. It's so hard to play a long period of time and then actually play. Like when you get, year 13, and God, I think he got hurt after that game, and I think he was done. But I love that record. Love it.
Yeah, of course, you don't play 13 seasons all that easily. And I was like, I was doing like the research. I found that and I was like, there's no way. I was like,
Yeah.
there's no way Tom Brady never
That's the
threw a
best.
pass to someone at like 43. Like, there's
Yeah. That's the
no
one
way.
record Brady doesn't have.
I was like, there's no shot. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'll bring it up anyway.
One so every year up here in Boston, like after the end of the season, there's this Twitter handle, like it's Boston Sports Information or something like that. They'll always like list the people who are closest to that record, and then when the season's over, it's like another year safe. It's kind of funny.
That's amazing. And of course, you played in a different era with Testaverde and all those great quarterbacks. Now you get to watch guys like, of course, Kelce and Kittle and all those other great tight ends of the modern day. How do you feel the position's evolved since your retirement back in 07?
Man, I tell you what, the tight end is, it's amazing. There's almost like three different types of tight ends now. And they're really, the traditional tight end really doesn't exist. A traditional tight end is hand on the ground, blocking this guy, blocking that guy, and running routes. Like, it's, to me, it's very specialized. You have your flex tight ends, you have your H tight ends, you have guys that are just tall and lanky. You have the George Kittles of the world that who takes a lot of pride in, run blocking and being physical and using up all his energy to set the edge. And at the same time, like, the dude won't run out of bounds. That's just the way he is. That's the way he was taught early on in his career. But I would say the one thing I think it's like they're such an important part of offenses now. You can see that tight ends are getting drafted in the first round. He had a couple in the first round this year. Like, they're constantly pushing out like these tight ends, these like, these just almost hybrid super, super human guys, right? They're 6'5", they're 6'6", they're 260, they're probably 245 to, 265, but they can run and they're physical, right? And they're shifty. And I love the fact that, listen, the receivers are always going to be receivers. The tight ends are becoming so much more valuable than they used to be based on how much production and how many mismatches. Like, they're really starting to integrate them into the offense, and the college game is providing all
Exactly.
these different body types and all these different, and the college offenses are doing this and doing that, and just the guys are huge, like they're 6'6" and 6'7". I mean, there's your 6'3" guys in there too. And you see these guys on cleats, in their cleats, like on the field, you're like, holy Jesus, you're an avatar creature. What the hell? What lab were you made in? That's the type of thing that you're getting. So I love it, man. Love it.
It's just so funny to me how you can list, Kyle Pitts and Chris Manhertz at the same position because they could not be further away from each other.
Yeah, even Kyle Pitts, I'm like, I mean, he's technically a tight end, but he doesn't do tight end things. I mean, he's
I don't know if I've seen him block a single time.
And even Kelce, it's funny. If you watch Kelce, it is kind of funny. Like, Kelce's not really like moving anybody. But in the same breath, I'm like, he doesn't really need to. He just needs to get in the way. The backs in the league are so good that arm tackles don't get him down. So you don't have to pancake anybody. You just have to, hold the line. You don't necessarily have to set the edge, but you can't give up ground.
Just be a
So
moderate annoyance.
yeah, and you'll see a lot of coaches will say the same thing. Like, every now and then you'll get this guy who's just, listen, he doesn't fuck around and he likes physical contact. He likes to put his hands on your chest and he likes to move you around against your will. I was like that. There's not a lot of guys like that. There just aren't. They'll bring in a bigger guy to do that. He'll be specialized blocker that'll go out every now and then, but he's not the every down guy.
And from your era, if you could take one tight end that you either played against or that was a great tight end of your era and drop them in today to dominate, who would it be?
Now, there's a lot. I would say any tight end from my era, if they were given the same similar opportunities, they were all great, all tough. I mean, even my draft class was, Mark Bruner and Kyle Brady and Ken Digler, who went to Indianapolis and played at Illinois. Like, just us four alone, all those guys played forever. Like Mark and Kyle played forever. I mean, they played one more year than I did. But ultimately, like for my era, like all of them. I mean, the ultimate guy, oh my God, why am I forgetting his name? I can't remember. I can't believe I'm forgetting his. Oh well. But there's a ton of them.
There's one guy who I always think of, way before your era. Of course, this is
Who?
more like my dad's era, but Kellen Winslow was like
Oh
just
yeah.
such a great guy. And he played back in like what, like the 80s and 70s.
Well, Kellen Winslow, again, tall, smooth. Like, if you'll take Kellen Winslow, then take Mark Bavaro, right? Mark,
Giants legend.
I mean, he was just I mean, the only thing that screwed him up, the only reason he's not in the Hall of Fame is because he just got hurt, you know. But he had some years where, like, holy shit, he was Gronk before he was Gronk. I mean,
Yeah.
even like Jeremy Shockey, I loved his
Giants
game.
legend.
Zach Ertz, I love Zach Ertz's game. Big, tall, you know, strong kid. Went to a predominantly like went to Stanford, but was blocking at the line of scrimmage. And I mean, he still flexed out. He goes and but done doing all sorts of things. All those guys, I love them all.
Yeah, I mean everyone. A tight end's such a fun position to me because they're not like the as flashy as the wide receivers or maybe not get paid as much as the tackles, but they do what both of those do to pretty good levels.
No, Jack, and I mean this in all sincerity, the second hardest job in the NFL after quarterback, when it comes to what you're expected to do, all the different body types, all the different positions that you have to line up, how much of a volume, the volume that you need to know of the offense, and is the tight end position. Like, the tight end position is easily the second most hardest position to play. Now, you can say corner because it's like a skills thing, but they line up on the same side every time. They take one guy. Okay, I'll just follow this guy around. Like, they need to do a couple coverages. As a tight end, you got to line up everywhere. You got to know what the tackle's doing, the guard is doing. You got to know the wide receiver position. You got to know the back position. You can never hear the freaking snap count. They like to keep it a secret. You got to know who the Mike is. You got to know who the Sam is. You play against everybody. They move you around constantly. So the volume that you need to know is second only to the quarterback. That's it. Second only to him.
Wow.
So that's the truth. Like, that is flat out the truth. You ask anybody who knows what they're talking about, and if they say corner, like, yeah, it's difficult to play corner. Like, yeah. But you don't gotta know much of anything to play corner. Not bit. Like, okay, you're gonna take out, you're the best corner on the team. Okay, find the best wide receiver. Wherever he goes, just follow him. Okay. So, anyways,
Yeah, and
that's
never mind the fact that tight ends are usually the ones, getting motioned on those plays and stuff to
shift,
block a different guy.
motions, snap count, tight, off the ball, on the ball, in the backfield, flexed, in the slot. Short slot, motion in, motion out. I mean, goal line, short yardage,
Everything under the
high
sun.
fullback, wham block, ISO. It's ridiculous. I wish I could be one of those fat cow offensive linemen who literally line up in the same damn spot every single time and just block the same guy. He lines up, he's with his buddy tells him all the stuff, and they just have their own little relationship. It's
Oh my
ridiculous.
goodness.
Too easy.
Oh, that's amazing. What a way to end this show. Holy cow. That's going to do it here from episode number 42 of the Playoff Push Podcast. Mr. Fourier, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Holy cow, man. What a show. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. I love doing this for you guys. And that's going to be it. Jack Dobbins signing off episode 42 in the books.